Good morning. When we are young, we see things or put those around us and we think they are bigger than life. They are doing things that astound, amaze, and we start to want to be them. When I was growing up, John Glenn was somebody I looked up to a little bit, because he got to go to space. And if you know me, I can't even ride a roller coaster or take the Missouri Hills very well. So I'm going to go to outer space. Yeah, I was a little off base having him as a friend somebody I wanted to emulate. But I didn't know that at the time. I'd have figured it out about time that thing ship took off and I ended up with the clouds and they'd had to bring her back home. I had another one I used to think about a lot. I used to like a lot when I was young. Evel Knievel. If you don't know who Evel Knievel is, he took a motorcycle and he would jump things. And it's reported that he broke every bone in his body at least once. And some of them he broke twice in jumping these things. And he would jump fountains. He would jump water. He would jump 14 buses at a time. And come to think of it, I probably wouldn't really want to be like him nowadays because I don't want to go anywhere near something that's only got two wheels on it. I have enough trouble controlling four-wheeled vehicles, not let alone two-wheeled. But when you're young, you don't think about that because you've got that star in the headlights, deer in the headlights look, you know, with the star power. Wow, they're doing important things. They're everybody likes them. Well, the more you find out about, except John Glenn, I think John Glenn lived a pretty clean life his whole life. But Evel wasn't quite that bad. But now that I've gotten older, I realize I'm never going to be Evel Knievel. Closest I'll come to that is getting on my sofa and jumping on the floor. And I'm not sure I want to do that anymore. Our grandkids have gotten brave enough, they'll get on the back of the sofa and jump off now. But then Grandpa gets mad at them after a while. Blake nowadays, or I don't know if he still does, but he was a big Captain America fan. I don't know if he still is or not. But you'd come home from work or he'd be there at the house and he'd have on the Captain America costume and the mask and all that stuff. Because, you know, he looks at Captain America because he sees him on the cartoons and he sees him in the movies and he sees what he's doing. He's saving the universe from evil doers. But yet, when Blake gets to be 35 or 40 and he's that enamored with Captain America, then we might get a little concerned, Bruce. Master Chief or whatever it's called. Allison likes Doc McStuffins. In fact, she likes Doc McStuffins enough that she'll go around the house sometimes and she'll play doctor. But, you know, someday she'll come to the realization that, clever years, Allison, that Doc McStuffins isn't everything, you know, it should be. But, you know, she'll grow up eventually. But Doc McStuffins will still be there, and she'll still be enamoring your little kids and those kind of things. It even goes as far as to dressing like Mom and Dad when they're at work. I won't find it. I'm not going to embarrass her, but there was a picture a long, 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 long time ago of Stacy dressing like me when I worked at Western Auto with my white shirt on and black pants, and, of course, the shirt went clear down past her knees, and she wanted to be like me for Halloween one year. Well, I don't think you'd get her to dress like me nowadays. She's outgrown that. So we get older. We learn things. We understand. We start looking at things in a different light. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, there's a section in that scripture that says, "When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, and then shall I know as also as I am known. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things." I'm 56 years old, and hopefully I'm not considered a child anymore. So I think I've gone to the, when I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, some people might think I'm childish at times with some of the things I do, but yet when it comes to religion, when it comes to Christ, when it comes to my salvation, I think I've got to the point where I need to put away the childish things and become as a man in the Scriptures and in my understanding of the Scriptures. I think that's important to remember because, as we're talking about this morning in class, we have heroes of faith that we look at in the Scriptures that show us the way to do things, how they overcame many struggles and trials, and how they became one with Christ and one with God in their dealings. And I think I need to kind of emulate them a little bit and think about how they got through their trials and their troubles. In Hebrews chapter 11, I'm not going to stomp on what we're talking about in class, but there is a series of verses there in chapter 11. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. I'm asking myself this morning, have I left the past behind me, and am I looking for a better thing? There's a warning in this that all these people that were faithful people in these scriptures that it talks about this whole chapter did something. They looked away from their past life and they looked towards a better promise. They looked away from what they were doing and realized there's a better thing down the line. Would Abraham have offered his son if he didn't think there was a better thing in store for him? Would Noah have built the ark if he didn't think there was a better thing in store for him? And all the way down the line on those. And I think we need to take that warning to ourselves. That they seek a country different than what we're in right now. And I'm not talking about the country of the United States of America, because I don't know that it'll ever change. Okay? All we can do is exist in it and hopefully look forward to what awaits us at the end of time. But I think the warning there is, and if they had been mindful of that country once they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But they desire a better country. If I think back to my life on this earth, am I going backwards or am I going forwards? Well, I think in a way I'm going backwards, because I'm thinking about what I used to have, what I could have had, what I gave up to serve Christ, when I should be looking at what I have, what I'm going to get, an eternity with Christ. I can still exist in this world, but yet I need to have my mind focused on what's coming, not what's been or where I'm at now. Because I'm looking forward to a better country. I'm looking forward to a better home. And that's hard to do, because I live in an ever-changing world. I recently went through a review. And you always wonder when you go through a review at work, do they just sit there and hand them a piece? Because I go through five different departments when I get my review. And when they sit down with you and Dee starts talking about it, you wonder if she just hands these people the paper and there's check marks. They just check mark down through there. That's what I do when I'm doing a review of at the end of a class. They want us to evaluate. Well, am I going to evaluate that the teacher was worthless and he couldn't do anything? I didn't like the food. No, I usually put, pretty good stuff on there. So you wonder just really how much of a review are you getting from these people sometimes. I've never had a bad review, but then it gets down to the end, I kind of question, because they tell me I'm doing everything right, I'm doing good, and everybody likes working with me, and I'm the guy to go to. But yet, when there's a possibility of 50 points and I only got 41, I look at, okay, who dinged me here? I mean, I'm that good and there's somebody dinging me still? But, it's going to happen. But yet, I can't look back, what did I do last year that maybe caught me? I need to look for what I can do better in the next year. And after 22 years, I'm still looking for things I can do better. And after 50 years as a Christian, I got to figure out what day I got baptized. It ain't been 50 years. Probably 43. I was probably 13 when I got baptized. In 43 years, I need to look back at the way I was, but I need to be looking forward, because I can still learn things after 43 years. Chapter 11 is the Heroes of Faith chapter, and it gives us that warning in the middle there that we need to desire a better country, and we need to be looking for that better country. If you've gone to any Bible schools or VBSs, There are several songs that kids sing about people in the Scriptures. Not so many of them in the New Testament, but a lot of them in the Old Testament. Well, I'm not going to sing them for you today, because I don't know enough about them to sing them. And I'm not going to put everybody on the spot. But there's one that says, "Dare to be a Daniel." And it's "Dare to be a Daniel." And then I want to look at that this morning. I want to look at three examples in the Scriptures, and I want to ask us, do we dare to be these people? First one to look at is, do we dare to be a Zacchaeus? Y'all familiar with who Zacchaeus is, right? He's like me, he's a short little guy. I'm like Steve, I couldn't reach halfway up that board if I needed to. But let's look, dare to be a Zacchaeus in Luke chapter 19, starting in the first verse. Luke chapter 19, starting in the first verse. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was a chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and he could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he had to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him, and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying, that he was gone to be guest with that man that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, This day is thy salvation come to this house, for as much as also he is the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Do you dare to be a Zacchaeus in your life? Do we realize we are not perfect? Did Zacchaeus realize he was not a perfect man? Is that why he was seeking Christ? Because he probably had heard what Christ could do, and he heard Christ was an important person, and Christ could take care of things. So he realized he was not perfect, but yet he was a short man. Okay, there's a crowd of people. You know, if I stand in a crowd of people, even at classes, everybody says short guys in the front. Well, guess who goes to the front? Because for some reason, I was built close to the ground. I don't know if it's so I can get underneath things better than the rest of you or not. But I ended up in the front. Well, Zacchaeus had to felt that way. If I'm not in the front, I'm not going to see anything. So what did he do? He climbed a tree. He got up in the tree so he could be seen, so he could see what was going on. I wanted to know if anybody picked that up, climb a tree. He climbed the tree. He made himself stand out from the crowd. Okay? Christ knew what was going on. Christ saw everybody that was around him. But yet, did Christ not know he was up in that tree? Christ knew he was up in that tree. So Christ knew when he got to that tree, he could look up there and see Zacchaeus up in that tree. Because somebody was seeking him. And Christ knew that somebody was seeking him. So we need to make ourselves stand out from the crowd, as you did in verses 3 and 4. Now, I'm not saying to put bells and whistles on and lights and sirens and make yourself appealing to people, but make yourself known. Make people know who you are. Stand out from the crowd. The other thing he did was ignored all those who looked down on him. Okay. They all remembered saying that he was gone to be guest with the man that is a sinner. Everybody knew who Zacchaeus was. But could Zacchaeus change? Well, I think he could. Christ proved to him that he could. And I think Zacchaeus knew that he could change. He just needed the right direction in his life. He needed somebody to tell him that you can change. Recognize your shortcomings and be willing to change. Zacchaeus said, if I've taken anything that I shouldn't have, I return it to them. I restore him fourfold. I don't know too many people that are going to repay fourfold of anything they take. And I don't know that I expect fourfold back. But if somebody takes something, you'd expect payment back. But he says, if I've done anything wrong, so Zacchaeus, yes, he was a sinner, but I think Zacchaeus was trying to live a good life. He was just guilt by association kind of thing. He was a tax collector. Or he was chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And if you will seek out Christ, if you will seek out God, you will receive a reward if faithful to him. Did Zacchaeus receive a reward? Yes, he did. Christ recognized him. Christ said, today a salvation has come into your house. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. So do you dare to be a Zacchaeus in your life? Do you dare to stick out from the crowd? And that's hard to do. I can guarantee you can go to any seminar or any class, or even here this morning, go to the break. And there will be all kinds of chattering and yakking, and everybody's getting along, having fun, giggling. Okay? Sit down, have somebody stand up front and ask a question and say, can I have a response to that? I guarantee if you're in a seminar or a class at work, there are going to be 13 guys sitting there and ain't a one of them going to raise their hand because they don't want to be embarrassed. Okay, they're not willing to put themselves out there. And I think that's what Christ is wanting us to do, to be willing to put ourselves out there for Him, to let people know that we believe in Him, to put ourselves up in that tree and to be seen. And that's a hard thing to do. I struggle with it a lot. I don't know if this class I went to at Hennepin helped me any, but I seem to be a little more willing to open up. But what caused that is they forced me to do a 10-minute or 5-minute, a 10-minute dissertation off the top of my head. They gave me 5 minutes to prepare and 5 minutes to give it, 5 minutes to prepare and 10 minutes to give it the next day. And I'm standing in front of 13 people I didn't know from anybody. You know, one guy was from Canada. Yeah, I'm going to see a guy from Canada every day of my life. Well, I see a lot of people in my daily walk of life, and I need to be willing to be a Zacchaeus and stand out from the crowd. Do we dare to be a Daniel? In Daniel chapter 6, starting in the 10th verse. Starting in verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed, and gave thanks unto his God, as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making his supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save thee, O king, shall be cast in a den of lions? The king answered and said, This thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. They answered and said before the king that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judea, regardeth not thee, O king, nor they decree that thou assign, but maketh this petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king, said unto the king, King, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is, that no man, decree, or nor statute which the king establishes may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel, and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought, and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet. Do you dare to be a Daniel? Daniel knew what he was doing. The decree was signed that nobody should make a petition of any god for 30 days other than the king. Daniel knew what he was doing. Did that affect Daniel any? No. Daniel went on up to his room 3 times a day, opened the windows and prayed. Could he have left the curtain shut? Sure, God would have heard the prayers with the curtain shut. But would Daniel have been comfortable giving a prayer with the curtains shut? There's no doubt that Daniel opened them curtains every day when he prayed. So why would he change? The decree was signed. All he would have had to do was shut the curtains and they wouldn't have known it. But yet you see the king trying to get out of it. I see the king kind of backpedaling a little bit. Yeah, I signed it, but I'm going to let it go for a little bit. You know, I just kind of get the feeling he wasn't really willing to make the effort to put Daniel in the lion's den until he was forced to do it. But that's not the part of the story I'm looking at. If we're daring to be a Daniel, we need to live a life that shows others we are different. In that same chapter, in verse 4, it says, Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could not find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. They had nothing on the man. This was a witch hunt. They were trying to get him, but they couldn't use anything against him. The only thing he used was his God against him, and that's what they did. So do I dare to be a Daniel and live a life that shows others that I am different? Okay? I'm amongst the world on a daily basis, but do they see a difference in me than with their activities? I went into a job site up in Iowa State the other day, and I almost walked back out. I mean, it wasn't because of a customer. It was because of another crew that was working up there. There was guys in there laying pipe in the ceiling, plumbers. And I was there for 30 seconds trying to find somebody who knew what was going on so I could get to work. And I heard probably a dozen, if not more, swear words come out of this one man's mouth And that's all it was swear words. I'm not going to. I'm thinking, man, I hope nobody's in here that works for the university, because they're going to hear this and this guy's going to get in trouble. Well, I made sure. I mean, I you have to watch yourself, because you get around that long enough, it's liable to have an effect on you. Well, I had to watch myself for the rest of the day I was there, that I didn't let something slip, because that's what it would do. It would slip out. Well, I heard him doing it, so it's okay for me to do it. Now, when the people came around to see me, I'm hoping they saw that I was a little different than them. You know, things were going bad. I was having issues, but yet I wasn't letting the dirty words fly like this guy was. I mean, I'd hate to go back to my boss and have him say, well, these people called in and said, you were the most foul-mouthed person there. Well, that's what they're trying to do with Daniel. They're trying to pin him down. Hey, they're trying to make Daniel look like he's doing something wrong, and he wasn't. And we need to keep doing what we know to do is right. In we find that in chapter 10, he went up and he continued to pray. Would have been just as easy to pull the curtains and not let anybody see it. But he had the curtains open, because that's what he's used to doing. He did not alter his stance because the world wanted him to alter his stance. And we need to do the same thing. The world may tell us to do things a certain way. We need to remember to do them the way we're used to doing them. And we need to be prepared for the consequences. No, no doubt, probably Daniel was friends with some of these people that turned on him, I would guess. But there's a mob mentality there. When one person wants to get on somebody, everybody else joins in, and then it all turns against us. We need to be prepared for the consequences of our actions. The loss of friends, maybe the loss of power. Were they trying to strip Daniel of his power that he had in the kingdom? Yes, they were. And the only way they could do it was to turn him against, we use his God to turn him against them. And a loss of a job. No doubt if Daniel had died, he'd have lost his job. But yet Daniel didn't die. Daniel came out stronger than before he went in. Not only in the eyes of God, I'm sure, but in the eyes of the king. Because the king was impressed. Because like I've said before, I can guarantee the king's never thrown a person in the lion's den and seen him walk back out. It just don't happen. So what do we learn from Daniel? I think what we learn is we need to remember God will stand with you during hard times. We know all the scriptures, you know, God will not allow us to be tempted, but we can withstand, but we'll provide a way of escape. And he tells us, he that is with me, I will stand with him. If he'll confess me, I'll confess him. If he denies me, I'll deny him. Scriptures are full of warnings. But all we need to do is we need to remember that God will stand with us during the hard times. Romans chapter 8, verse 31. What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? If I can remember that, I think I can overcome a lot of temptations, a lot of things in my life. If God be for us, who can be against us? And that's what Daniel thought, and that's what Daniel knew. God was with him, so who could be against him? Nobody, not even the lions. And he was delivered. This one I might have gone. When I put it down there, I know it fits, but you know I had to work it out in my head a little bit. Dare to be a Peter when he walked on the water. Matthew chapter 14, starting the 27th verse. Because trust me, if I could learn to walk on water, my job would be a lot nicer, because I wouldn't be sitting on floors that are full of gucky, wooky, mucky water. I could hover above them and be clean when I get back up. Ask Burgess, he'll tell you about it. Matthew chapter 14, starting the 27th verse. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. Then Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, O thou little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? And when they were come into the wind, into the ship, the wind ceased. Do we dare to be a Daniel? Or, I'm excuse, dare to be a Peter? Are we willing to step out of the boat? Peter was willing to step out of the boat, but he was willing to step out of the boat when he thought, when he knew that Christ was there to help him when he got on the water. Because Peter was aware of what water was, and Peter was aware you don't go in the water unless you know how to swim or got a life jacket on, and I'm not sure they had life jackets back then. So you don't go in the water. But he dared to get out of the boat and go in the water. But what happened is he became involved in the decision. He got out of the boat, which was okay. He was fine until he realized, I'm out of the boat. He realized, the waters are against me. They're boisterous. What am I doing out here? I mean, no doubt Christ was right there within arm's reach of him. But he took over the situation. He realized, I've bitten off more than I can chew. So I want to challenge us to dare to be a Peter today and to step out of the boat. But I want to warn us not to let me, become involved in the decision. Let Christ and God help us with the decision of what we do. We need to get out of the boat. We need to challenge ourselves. If I never challenge myself, I'm not going to know what I can do. I'm not going to know what I'm capable of. Looking back on it, Peter has to realize, I stood on the water for a little bit. I was doing it. I challenged myself and it worked until I decided I couldn't make it work anymore. And I left God out of the decision. We need to realize there are big challenges in serving God. There are challenges that we need to overcome. But we're not going to overcome them on our own. And we need to remember to keep our eyes on the prize. Keep our eyes on the goal. Because no matter what I do, my goal should be like I read in the first scripture there in Hebrews. I'm looking for a better city. I'm looking for a better country. I'm looking for something better in my life. But it's not going to come right away. It's not going to come tomorrow. Well, I hope it doesn't come tomorrow. Well, I hope if it does, it does. I shouldn't say I hope it doesn't come tomorrow. But if it does come tomorrow, I'll be happy. But it may not come tomorrow, so I need to realize I need to persevere on. Because Peter was fine on the water until he decided to make Peter the person in charge. And that's where our faith will start to waver and to wane, when we make Doug involved in the decisions. And I know I can do it because I've done it before. I've let Doug make the decisions and left God in the back burner. And that's not when things go good. Psalms chapter 23, 1 through... Well, 1 through... There's only 6 verses, I think, in that. Psalms 23. Psalms 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me and thine enemies, in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. How do we dare to be a Peter? Dare to be a Zacchaeus? Or dare to be anybody else in the scriptures we can look at? The scriptures are full of them. People that had insurmountable challenges, they were able to overcome them because of their belief in Christ and their belief in God and letting Him take the reins. As we see in Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in a path. It doesn't say Doug leads me beside the green pastures. Doug leads me beside the still waters. Because anywhere Doug is, there's probably not going to be still waters if he's involved in it. And though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Are we all not walking through the valley of the shadow of death in a way? Because this life will come to an end eventually. But yet, we're walking the valley that will allow us to go to that valley of the shadow of death, because Christ is with us and he will deliver us, as it tells us in Hebrews chapter 11, if we realize we have a better country ahead of us, looking for us. Now, I am going to butcher this one up probably. There's a song in the kids that says, God's love is, I think it's so big you can't climb over it, so wide you can't go around it. Am I close on that song? It's been a long time. But anyway, there's something to that effect. God's love is so big you can't climb over it, so wide you can't go around it, so deep you can't go under it, you got to go through the door. Only one way to get to God's love, and that's to go through the door. I need to go to more VBSs. It's been so many years since I've really been to one and participated in the songs. I don't even know what the songs are sometimes anymore, but I'm pretty sure that's the one it is. But God is all-encompassing. God is so big, so wide, so deep, we can't get around him unless we try to make it go around. We try. What we do is we don't even try. We don't even go through the door. We just stand on the outside and say, it's too much for me, I can't handle it. He's too big for me. God is never too big for us. We're usually too small to realize that he can make us big. Matthew chapter 7. I was hoping my kids would all jump up and sing one of them songs. You know, they used to go to VBSs all the time, but not going to happen, I don't think. Matthew chapter 7, 24 through 27. Oh, I'm in 6. That's why it doesn't look right. Therefore, whosoever heareth these things of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. I need to build my spiritual house, my spiritual life, on the rock foundation, and that rock is Christ. That rock is God, and that rock is his world, his word. And if I'm built on that, nothing can knock me down. They'll try. The winds will come. The torrents will strike me. But it will not fall because I'm founded upon a rock. Does that mean I won't shudder a little bit and shake? Possibly get a crack? Possibly. But I won't fall down. I think God is able to make it so I don't even get a crack in my armor if I stick around with him. But what happens if we don't? And everyone that heareth these things of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And great was the fall of it, because it was not built on the rock. It was built on sand. That sand being possibly me. I'm strong enough to do it on my own. I don't need anybody's help. And then I tend to fall down when that happens. And how does that happen? Because we know we have a need, but we fail to ask for help. You know, God's there. If only we will ask, he will give us the help. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. If you stand at my front door, don't knock on the door, I'm not going to open the door for you. I'm not going to know you're there. Well, that's what he's telling us here. We need to be willing to knock on God's door and say, I want to come in. And if we do that, he'll open the door and let us in. And we need to seek, and we need to receive. Doesn't do any good to open the door. If I open the door, and you just stand there and look at me, I'm probably going to shut the door on you again because we're really going to know what you're really there for. But yet, when God opens the door, his door, and we ask for it, we need to seek what he's offering, and we need to find it. The scriptures are full of stories of ordinary people who did extraordinary things to remain followers of God. As we ask ourselves this morning, have we decided to do an extraordinary thing and forsake following the worldly lusts and the worldly flesh and the worldly influences on our lives, and have our robes cleaned with Christ's blood and become clean? I can be the dirtiest, ugliest, filthiest sinner in the world, and if I come to Christ, I will have my robes washed white in the blood of His baptism, in the blood of His sacrifice. But I have to be willing to come and put Doug on the back burner for a few minutes and realize that I need to wholly give myself to Him and allow Him to wash those away. All the examples we looked at today had a choice to make. That choice was either to serve God or serve themselves. You know, Zacchaeus could have stayed in the crowd. Zacchaeus could have just stood there and watched him go by. Zacchaeus would have just been Zacchaeus at that point in time, right? Daniel could have hidden in his room with the windows down, shades down, and prayed. At that point in time, the people would have thought, ha, we won. We beat Daniel. But Daniel and him, they all had a choice to make, and their choice was to serve God and to remain in Him and not look away from Him. Luke chapter 16, 19 through 31. There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. There was a certain beggar named Lazarus who was laid at his feet full of sores, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dog came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And in hell he lift up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water, and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in thy lifetime receivest thou good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to this that would come from thence. Then he said, I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house. For I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they also come to this place of torment. And Abraham said unto him, They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto him, If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. That story sends shivers down my spine, because I could be either one of those two people in that story at any particular time in my life. I could be the rich man faring sumptuously every day, but yet I was that rich man faring sumptuously every day. But what did I do? I decided to give my life to Christ, give my life to God. Or I could be like I could be like a certain beggar Lazarus, laid at the gate full of sores, being ignored by everybody. I was that person at one time probably too. But yet I decided to accept Christ into my life, and I became a rich man at that point in time, rich in God's eyes. But you know what scares me the most about this? Is there's going to come a time when the decision's going to be made. The decision's going to be made, where will I spend eternity? And I can't make that decision for anybody but myself. It gives us an indication in Scripture. I can't say, I've got a brother that I really like, would like to come to eternity with me. Can we send somebody back to help him? He's given the warning here that they have the prophets and we have the Scriptures. They have the prophets. Let them hear them. We have the Scriptures. Let us read the Scriptures and understand them, and we'll know what we're to do. What will your answer be if today were the day that you were called to eternity like the rich man and Lazarus? What would your answer be? Would you be caught looking backwards at the way things used to be and enjoying them too much? Or you'll be found faithful and looking forward to a home in heaven? The clock to eternity is ticking. It's always ticking. It's been ticking since day one when Adam and Eve sinned in the garden. The clock to eternity has been ticking. The question is, are you ready? Are you ready to spend eternity with Christ in glory? Or are you ready to spend eternity like Lazarus or the rich man was, seeing what it could have been like if only I had accepted God into my life? The clock to eternity is ticking. Are you ready? The invitation is yours as we stand and sing the closing song.